American history through a student's eyes. From the 20s to the New Deal, back to the crisis. Hello everyone and welcome to this new episode of this series entitled Today's History. In this episode, we'll talk about the Roaring Twenties and the Wall Street crash with the students of Mrs. Barrow's Eurocrash.
Without further ado, let's begin with the first subject about the Roaring Twenties with our two first speakers.
I think we can start with a simple definition of our topic of the day. So, what are the Roaring Twenties?
The Roaring Twenties were the decades characterized by economic prosperity, rapid social and cultural change, and a mood of exuberant optimism.
It is true that when we think about this period, one of the first things that came to our mind is this economic prosperity. But were there so many changes, or wouldn't it be the nostalgia that speaks?
For sure, it was the prosperous period between the increase in consumption, thanks to the credits and advertising that is developing great new needs.
And what about banks?
The stock market speculation, often done on credits, is unleashed and pushes the economy to develop thanks to this new investor.
I guess, with these changes, everyday life and society were impacted?
Yes, it is true. Electricity has gradually been introduced into homes, bringing a certain comfort. Radio democratized and the sale exploded. Also, there was a sharp increase in leisure.
I see that a lot of things changed at that time, but was it the case for women?
At the same time, women gained freedom. Here we can take the example of flappers. Of course, all this could be done thanks to the increase in purchasing power in general.
All this seems wonderful. And you? Who are passionate about this period, would you have liked to live there?
It's hard to say. Not everyone lives the luxurious life of Gatsby.
Thank you for your intervention, and let's keep moving with our second subject about the emancipation of women.
During the Roaring Twenties, America was prospering with rising cultural and social movements like the Flappers. Flappers was a slang term used to describe impetuous young women who did things that weren't proper for women at the time. They wore short skirts, had bobbed hair, smoked and drank, and even drove automobiles, which gave them more independence. Flappers were heavily criticized for the way they carried themselves, their scandalous appearance and improper behavior. They were called reckless, unintelligent and flippant. Older generations saw them as immoral, but they are now considered as the first independent woman.
This was very interesting, thank you, and let's keep going with the Harlem Renaissance.
Hello, today I'm with a specialist on the Harlem Renaissance, Olisa Thompson. This 1920s movement centered in the uptown Manhattan neighborhood encouraged a dynamic reawakening and reimagining of art, music and literature. Tell us more about it.
Well, one of the main figures of this era was Alan Locke, who qualified this as the Negro Movement, a movement by and for people from the post-slavery Great Migration. The Harlem Renaissance definitely changed Black American recognition.
It's true, this movement helped to change the perception and realities of African American life at the time. The artists were internationally recognized and respected, such as Louis Armstrong.
Louis Armstrong, of course, but also Jerry Wallmonton and Duke Ellington were popular jazz musicians. Jazz poetry was created, notably with Langston Hughes, and of course literature with Geraldine Brooks.
Has this movement been incorporated into white culture?
Indeed it has. Artists were respected and white people even incorporated African-American rhythm and harmonies into their music, although living in a segregated society and blackface was still a thing.
Thank you very much, Olisa Thompson, for this information. It was a pleasure to discuss this major cultural moment with you.
What a great subject. Thank you for your time. Now let's discuss the Prohibition era.
Hello everyone. Welcome to today's history. I'm Louis-Camille Encombe and today we are here to talk about Prohibition. I'm happy to introduce you Tom Duquet, an historian who is specialized in the Prohibition era. He is going to help us to understand this dark period of America's history. Hello, Tom. I'm very pleased to welcome you here.
So do I.
Let's get started. First of all, why did Wilson wanted to set up the prohibition?
So it all started with a legion and some special groups, like some groups of women complaining about how alcohol ruins their family lives. And for religions, it's a question of values.
Oh, thank you. And in the facts, how did the government implement the prohibition?
It's all about the 18th Commandment, who banned the creation, sale and transport of alcohol on the American soil, causing the end of many businesses.
And what was the reaction of the population?
It was kind of two-sided, because the ones complaining finally got what they asked for, but the ones who used to go to saloon, pub and everything didn't really accept that amendment, and this kind of like anger turned into smuggling, speakeasies and some violent problems.
It was a pleasure to have you with us. Thank you for coming here.
That was so fascinating. Thank you. And let's hear about speakeasies.
Hello, everyone. So today we are going to talk about something that was usual and even characteristic of the Prohibition era. Speakeasies. So I'm extremely honored to receive Lilou, who is well-known expert of this period of American history, and especially of the speakeasies, and who is by my side to help us to understand as best as possible what the speakeasies were, how they used to operate, why with whom. So first of all, what do we call speakeasies?
A speakeasy was an illegal bar during the Prohibition era. This word comes from the verb speak and the adjective easy. It means that people who knew the location of the speakeasies had to stay quiet about it.
And where could we find speakeasies?
Speakeasies were located in the attic, in the basement, or in the back room of soda shops, coffees, flower shops, or even funeral homes. So in every place that could secretly house an illegal bar.
So, well, let's recap. If I get right, speakeasies were secret places where only a few people had access.
Yeah, it's true.
So could you tell me about who went to the speakeasies and how they entered?
Everyone could be found in speakeasies, from factory workers to judges. They just needed a special knock or a secret password. And to consume alcohol, they used other code words, such as cocktail, for example.
Interesting. And did problems happen sometimes?
Yes, of course, because police was a real threat at this time. That's why some speakeasies were equipped with emergency exits, trapdoors and secret cabinets to hide alcohol. They even had very special signals in case of problems.
Thank you for all this information.
Thanks to you.
What a great subject. Thanks the two of you, and let's hear about Al Capone.
Hello everyone, today we have the amazing opportunity to talk to a very special guest, Al Capone's sister. It's a pleasure to have you on our radio. Let's introduce yourself.
Hello, thank you for having me today. As you said, my name is Mafalda and I'm Al Capone's sister. I was born in New York in 1912 and I've always been interested in my brother's business, even if he's done a lot of illegal stuff.
Thank you, Mafalda. Now let's move on to some context. That's to say, the moment when it all started.
Okay, so it all started during the 1920s when Prohibition was enforced. During this period of time, alcohol was forbidden, and my brother immediately saw the opportunity to make money rapidly by getting into smuggling.
Can you explain to us what was the relationship between him and Johnny Torrio, the man at the head of the crime organization?
He met him when he moved to Chicago and rapidly became close to him. Johnny Torrio is the person who made him become one of the most dangerous criminals at the time.
And do you have in mind some memories of special events organized by your brother?
Of course, I will always remember St. Valentine's Day massacre on February the 14th of 1929, when seven of my brother's rivals were killed.
Wow, it gives me the heebie-jeebies. Thank you, Mafalda.
Such an amazing story. Thank you a lot. The next subject is about the stock market crash. Let's listen to it.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to today's emission. Do you know what date it is? Yeah, October the 24th. Remember the Great Depression? Well, everything started precisely on October the 24th, 1929, with the Wall Street crash. And guess what? That's today's topic. So Mayan and Xavier are going to present it by interviewing Yanis, an historian, Maëlys, the economist, and our guest, Margaret, who did live the Great Depression.
Can you tell us more about your experience of the crisis?
10 years old. My dad left home really early that day. When he came back very late in the evening, he had his collar shirt ripped off, bruises all over his body, and tears kept falling down his face. He had fought all day long in Wall Street to save a family from ruin, and he had failed. I remember very clearly Black Thursday. I was about 18 years old. My dad left home really early that day. When he came back very late in the evening, he had his collar shirt ripped off, bruises all over his body, and tears kept falling down his face. He had fought all day long in Wall Street to save a family from ruin, and he had failed.
And what about your neighborhood?
My neighbors, the notorious Thompson family, was in the very same situation as us. They were forced to leave their home and took Route 66, hoping for a better future in bigger cities. Their youngest daughter was my childhood best friend, and I've never seen her again.
Thank you for sharing your experience with us. It must have been a very hard step to overcome.
So, Yanis, what happened in the 20s in the United States to cause such a huge financial crash?
During the 1920s, America was living life in full swing. The years called the Roaring Twenties saw many changes of social life and economics, so as to many citizens were living with high debts in order to buy houses or cars. Many Americans were investing their money in stock market.
So, in 1929, the 24th of October is the Black Thursday. Maëlys, can you develop specifically the economic side of this crisis?
The confidence was low, so prices fell and created a bearish market. People used to buy shares, but they couldn't pay off their debts. Bankers invested in unsound investments. On Black Thursday, 12 million stocks were sold because of a rise of panic. Only 6% of the population owned the stocks. By the end of the 1929, 641 banks closed.
And that's all for today. So thank you for staying with us and be back tomorrow for more must-known history facts.
Thank you all for your time. All of it was very interesting. To finish this episode, let's hear a speech of Roosevelt.
My fellow Americans, I'm Franklin Delano Roosevelt on the NBC Radio Channel. This broadcast is the first of many. I'll be telling you about the country, about the help we'll provide in the current state of the economy. We know you're going through the worst since the crash of so many companies, banks and factories. Capitals are being repatriated from European banks, which will help us get back on our feet. It will solve many of our financial issues. When companies will be able to provide some work and wealth, our families will be able to repay their debts, and unemployment throughout the nation will finally be a thing of our past. I see a bright future in the US eyes. You have to hold out. God bless our people and God bless America.
What an episode. We all learned a lot from this. Well, this episode comes to an end. Thank you all. Bye.
American history through a student's eyes.
From the 20s to the New Deal, back to the crisis.